we have probabilities, and to make this sense meaningful, the sum for each row is 1, and we have the x to the b, and given the x, the following element of the sequence is b with probability of 0.2, and you can do everything you would like to. You even could put a different or a further transition table into such a cell with a different alphabet, and so and then it starts really to become a quite interesting behavior. So we have first the c to the a, then we are in state a, and then we look up a, and from a we have that's wrong. I shifted it. Shit. Okay, the red dot should be in the a to b cell. And then from B to C, then we are from C to B again. So you could again this structure. Physical on the left side. We have physical on the left side, the behavior on the right side, and what we need is, so to say, a middle layer to bridge this gap, and this is classification. That means the classification provides us from continuous analogous data with the A, B, and C. You could also turn it around, and the only thing you see is information. I've been sensing what your doubt, and so then I made a classification, and then I behaved. What you experienced is only the behavior, and that I have done some classification, that's already a theory of you about me. But that's also so we have a filtering, we have selecting, modeling, memories of course engaged, and so on. And all these are elements of deep structure. And do not misunderstand that as deep decoration, it's different. I call this is ontological tiramisu. It's a little bit questionable, this ontological, but it's very difficult, way more difficult. So the physical itself, that means a temperature or a sound or brightness or something like that, that itself has no structure. The structure is always imposed by applying a particular purpose and theory and so on. I resort to Aristotle at that place. So, but this translation from the physical to the behavior has consequences. We have the observables, we have the inner structure, which is hidden, and we can say that this hidden inner structure could be equal with inner states. In language, we call that moods for human beings. But this is really abstract. And this will be translated into the observables. That means, for instance, opening the window or increasing the heat flow, and so on. But this layering, because of this informational layer here, and this informational layer is, so to say, between two physical layers. We have the physical measurement and of the entity, then the entity is doing some classification, setting up, imposing the probability structure to the measurement, and then behaving itself with a different memory structure probably, and producing behavior which again is a physical movement. And at that place, that's actually the most interesting place. but I will not talk today about that. It is also the reason that if you do an observation of a complex thing, complex in quotation marks, you cannot have a purely syntactical model about a complex thing. You could not write down a formula about the city, like people really did 40 years ago, tried to do that 40 years ago. No, they believed even in that, and there have been some catastrophes about that. If you have a functionalist view about things in architecture or urbanism, you are implicitly assuming that there is a larger syntactical model in form of a formula that cannot exist because of this intermediate layer of that. I told you, so you have this small, the larger system, and you can put in a smaller system, so to say, into this large probability sequences, and then the inner part is embedded into the context of the larger sequence. And that's, such structures are used, for instance, by synthesizers. Actually, it is we have a transition table. It is even nested, but we do not distinguish perfectly the inner states and the behavior, the outer states. And the full Markov model looks like that. We have inner states. Previously I said ABC to that, X1, X2, and X3. And it is often realized in nature by networks like your brain. That means some entity which is doing a classification. And we have a particular sequence about that. That means you are, if you would be sad 5 months ago, it would be some kind of not normal anymore. Sadness and feeling glad stops after a while. So there's a probability structure behind that. And there is, for the translation of these inner states, we need a layer outside, which we can observe, and the Ys are the observables, hidden states and the observable activity. This is the sequence you have you can observe. And of course we have some linkage in between this genotype and phenotype. And this is again probabilistic. This is called the so-called, that's the full formal formulation then, this is called the hidden Markov model. Used in speech recognition, used in speech production, and so on. That's a very general way, probably the most general way to talk about sequences.
What is important is that you know when you need to work with sequences, you can go to Wikipedia, look it up, and understand it. There's no need now to follow the steps or anything.
So. Did I lose you? Completely lost? No, not really. So, Markov has made a very consequent probabilistic term, and for me, I find it quite important to get a grip on thinking in probabilistic terms, even for architects, for you, because you have to do with humans, and it's this strange phenomenon that till a few years ago, architectural plots and even architectural films always have been without people inside it. So the artificial camera flies and so on without people. That's strange. Of course, you can perfectly control a building if nobody is living in there. But if you have a process, so to say, which you render observable through your mind, through your classification capabilities, and this classification capability can of course be programmed, then you can say that the process somewhere out in the world is a sequence only before a particular model. And the Markov model is such a model. To talk about sequences, you could talk about sequences in a completely different way. For instance, applying literature theory. Then you also talk about sequences, particular sequences, but in a completely different way. There are small overlaps because Markov applied his theory to Eugene Onegin, his large ballad. But nevertheless, it's very, very different. But literature theory is also a model. And if you apply that to architecture, there are interesting frictions to observe. The same kind of frictions as occur if you apply the Markov theory to processes. So the transition matrix represents a probabilistic graph. If you have a probabilistic graph, that means a simulation system, and you wander through, and the simulation system provides you some kind of output, you can talk about such a system with a transition matrix of Markov. The kind of metaprogramming we already mentioned, that means the changing the if-then conditions without any reprogramming is data-driven metaprogramming. It opens also the door for auto-programming. That means you can think about how to regulate the change of the probabilistic rules, how to organize the way the probabilistic structure of your program changes across time. This is some kind like culture. That means, you could set up a rule that if the variance in such a row of transitions is very high, you should reorganize all your categories. This has nothing to do with the actual experience. This is kind of style of thinking than for the automate, and this is not on the same layer as the transition matrix itself, which produces your output or which produces your experience. It's as I said before, it's the embedding auto regulation. And Markov chain is an extremely important theory, the Markov theory, because it is a place from where you can depart into different areas. So to say, you can talk about many things using that one. It's not just any arbitrary methodology. Most of the grammars you could represent by a Markov system, and it would produce the same kind of output. So, the question was also before, by talking about all that stuff with the coefficients and these probabilities and so on. The first thing is that it introduces the notion of genotype and phenotype. That means an inner hidden structure with rules and the outer observable stuff, which is organized in a choreography, in a sequence, that means in a particular coherence and so on. So, if you raise, why should we talk about that? We could mirror that. Why not? What if not? what would we lose if we not talk about that, about processes, not in this way? So we have a clearly identifiable antipode to these probabilistic processes and the separation of into genotype and phenotype, and this is fixed firing. It came already up before. If you do not talk about probabilities, you say there's a fixed wire. It could be even a programmed fixed wire, so to say. It need not be a cable, but often you could replace a program then by a cable. And you could also think in very fixed wires. And this is then called ideology. That means any kind of input, fixed wire, always the same kind of output. Okay? Starting to think probabilistic with Markov, you are fine. So with fixed wiring, you can do any kind of trivial machines, from the clock to the door opener. And the assumption is that, the assumption is that what you are going to model is perfectly predictable. And you can write then a formula, and a formula is logically flat. A formula is formula. There is no deep structure anymore. You can everything you can see. So say, therefore, it is logically flat. There is no abstraction anymore. It is simply there. There is no historicity for formulas, because formulas have parameters, and you make the measurement, and formulas stay constant. And if you take the perspective for the whole system, you get a stimulus response device, pushing the button, blinking three times. Sometimes you need that kind of trivial machines, but probably not so often. Because if you think that if you're doing architecture, responsive architecture, or installations for humans, and you apply fixed wiring, then you implicitly assume that we are looking like this inside. This could be the observers, the visitors, users, and evidence. And this is quite widespread, unfortunately. So auto collision I mentioned, genetic and the phenotypic layer is very important, a very important figure of thought. The Markov process offers a smooth scale between crispness and smoothness. You could start even with if you program such a matrix or such a table, and you put, so to say, you have 20 alternatives, but you fill in a one probability of one exactly to one cell. Then you have a direct coupling. Then you have a fixed wire. But the Markov system as a whole could, so to say, blur this crispness. And then suddenly the machine or your installation or your space starts to explore you. Which is quite interesting. You could combine it with self-organization, with classification, with evolution. That means other conceptual worlds are compatible with that view. And the key is thinking probabilistically. And probably the most important, I didn't mention that explicitly, you can grasp the experience into such a structure, and at the same time you use the same structure for synthesis of a sequence. That's quite interesting and quite nice and so thank you. Now you are stoned with a with another chapter of probabilism.
There are a lot of these questions about behavior, and so they become very interesting when you go to this first question about infrastructure. How can we rethink infrastructure in the electrical distributed, miniaturized paradigm of ubiquitous availability of computers? If you really have this sort of sensorium as infrastructure, which today very often is still canalized in the human, in this hard, what you call fixed binary, in that way, then the the freedom of what to do with it is of course much smaller. And now it seems to be developing in the direction that the availability and the possibility to create the infrastructures in such an distributed way would be there, but it's really hard to think of why should we do it. And that's like the normal, but it's always, no? When you have a new technology, but you were fine with the old one, all your habits were evolved around the old one, you knew exactly what you had to expect if you were doing this. So then someone comes and says, look, this is much more clever. Yeah, it's nice, why should we use it, no? And this kind of probabilistic thinking, that's why we stress it so much, the mediality aspect, that information is probabilistic. You need to do your modeling and your sequencing and all these intermediate steps, which we're now in a very very technical software rhetoric presented. We will come back to that in the lectures tomorrow when we look at serialization or at the line from a more phenomenological perspective, and in my side more from a contextualizing perspective, and this was a very operational aspect. But it's all about if we have this availability of a lot of very potent dots that are not yet linked, that are not yet integrated into a coherence, available for integration in any kind of structure. How can we start to relate our minds to these new possibilities?
Actually. There's some kind of a paradigm shift in design theory and in practice design, and it was a rather slow process during the last 20 years, of course, spurred by technology, and you know that as all the discussion of human computer interfaces and the user centered view and the user based design and all that stuff, okay, and. At the time when you are designing, you do not know the behavior of the people. You could claim that you know, and you could claim that you exactly know how people act and respond. But this imposes strict programming to people. And this is unethical in my view. Deeply unethical. Just yesterday, there was a big article in the newspaper, in Tagesanzeiger, I think, that worldwide people are complaining about the increased frequency, the increased abundance, so to say, of strict rules in society. Everywhere, rules are growing and so on. And 20, 30 years ago, it wasn't the case. And the world also worked and functioned, so to say. And this tendency to more rules is a direct consequence from the physicalist paradigm of thinking. Always the claim that we are the experts and we know what the other side is doing and can do and should do. And this is not adequate anymore, I think. Because we have the power with the information technology, also for living in houses. We have the power to stuff houses in an extremely adaptive way, even in ways we cannot imagine so far, because we are still trained in a physicalistic way. And this is, the problem starts not with the material, the problem starts with the thinking and with the attitude to other people.
Most of all, it should be fun.
Yes, then it makes fun. an adaptive house can be very funny. It is not about filling the fridge. That's not fun part. Okay, any questions? Feel free to come up to me. Okay.
Just a technical one. I wanted to say that I don't know if you guys agree with me, but for me it was really cool to date with examples, both with doors and with and the story in the newspaper and the about the probability and the facades. It was just good for me to hear the examples.
Yeah.
I think it helps.
I also have a question. How do you choose the starting parameters of a sequence?
By random.
But how does it then learn? How does it, this probabilistic system, how does it learn from the users? Or how would it evolve, this probabilistic system? How can it change? How do you determine how it changes?
What do you think? What is necessary?
Sensing. Sensing somehow. But how would you sense what you feel or what you would like it to be?
Can I sense your feeling?
No, I don't think so.
But exactly, yeah. And the senses cannot do either.
Yeah.
So how?
What can I do?
Movement. The feeling causes movement, so you sense the movement.
Yeah.
Try to become. To observe what you're doing over time, it's a little of becoming of your structures just by joining your movements.
Yeah.
And you need random access to these inputs and outputs and just adapt to this kind of coexistence over certain times. And there's a kind of understanding and adjusting.
And you could, so to say, even the machine could develop some kind of a weird assumption, so to say. The machine thinks, in quotation marks, by some random variation, oh, I have detected a new category. Oh, there's a category, clearly there's a category. Because one kind of neural network can observe the other neural network, and so there's a new category. Then we can set up a new column and a new row in our Markov transition matrix. And suddenly we start experiencing the world in a completely different way. It's structurally different then. The whole perspective of the automaton to the world changes then. In this way, it's possible. That's a technical model. I do not say that we are. That's working
somehow.
This way.
And we will train that that over the year. Just start. It's really complicated to think, but this is the engineering view, as you always said, is the reductionistic or the trivial one. Is have a blank sheet of paper and just draw. And some petri change or whatever you want, a certain mechanism you want to have, and then you claim that behavior should be like that, and then you get this boring change B A B A B A B, yeah, and if you have five times N and C B A B A B A C, so things like that. So this is always the case if you start with a blank sheet of paper and try to establish rules. And this is a scarcity story. And this is a kind of naturalization. You think that if you really understand the nature of things, you are able to find the right algorithm how things should behave. And this is from the blank sheet of paper, just programming it or drawing it and so on. This Markov is an image of the abundance. So in principle, and Google is not working in another, it's based on Markov as well. the Google indexing. It's a relative strict one, but it's working the whole world in a thinking like that. And this is the abundance of information. In principle, each point, everything is there, and then you find, this is a kind of condensation we are talking about, you define the at this certain point, in this certain situation, in this certain historicity of what there for this point, you find to get appropriate adjustment of the parameters. But in principle, you are open to the whole world of input and output parameters, because interconnected in this electricity, in this internet thing, in the worldwide system. And so you are not a blank sheet on paper, but you are the everything paper, and then try to adjust a certain adjustment of these parameters in the everything, which is specific for this point. That's another kind, another way of approaching to contact an element and do programming and so on, to design what you want to have and so on. This is what we see with projection, what we think with design in abundance, and so on.
In the similar context, what do you think is the key trait for designing behavior in architecture, like? It could be responsiveness, adaptiveness, and so on, but it's definitely not the looking of it. It's not looking of it that looks like a creature or a living thing. But however,
yes.
would you still call it a behavior if it crossed the uncanny valley?
Is it kind of
uncanny valley?
What is
uncanny valley? When it looks too much natural, like when you on a machine or a robot looks too much natural, it gives us a feeling that it doesn't look like that.
It's not necessarily like that. Even that is the question of behavior.
Even that is included.
No, I mean, the examples you showed this morning in the lecture with the beach-walking creatures, they have nothing at all of immediate mimetic resemblance to animals. But because they're robots, they are not at all mimetic, but they feel alive. It's very strange.
Yeah, but for example, that Hello Joy ground thing, it looks really...
thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's a similar, yes. You think it looks very organic?
No.
No, not at all. No.
Oh, it looks organic, but too much organic, so it's.
So it would keep, you would like to keep the distance.
I already know that it's a fake thing.
Not really.
It's.
I would like to encourage you to read the book.
Mm-hmm.
Did you already?
No.
They explain exactly. No, they. They explore exactly this question about about life and machine, and how to talk about life. The interesting thing is that today you will not find introductory textbooks in biology where a definition of life is included anymore. It was only included till 1985. Around. And then they suddenly stopped, because artificial intelligence came along and artificial neural networks came along, and I'm doing programming all the time. I'm doing deterministic programming, I'm doing programming of things which are somehow alive. So the border, you could not assume a strict border, a strict humanness, or a strict kind of that's way of shamanistic view, probably. I don't know. But But this shamanistic views to technology is not appropriate, I think.
But with this kind of technology, this behavior and this border is matter of your design.
Yes.
It can
exactly.
be matter of your design first time.
So basically anything could be behavior.
Yeah.
If you have, if you have a sensing and a perception-based, a perception-performance coupling. That means you perceive and you perform. And then if the coupling there is not fixed wired, that means not lawful and not physicalistic, but somehow based on classifications, then you have behavior.
But did you talk about classification last time? No,
not yet.
Because classification, you are when he says that it's a probabilistic way of classification, which is itself departing from the initial modeling, it's almost the opposite of the kind of classification we have been talking about with the architectonics. Architectonics, now in philosophy, was all about how can we come up with classes at the first hand, because we need them to depart to build stable structures. And when you are talking about categorization, it's already very different from this from all the limits that we have been talking about. You know. So just don't get confused. It's not the same thing when he says you will need classification.
Not completely the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
But this would be another lecture sometimes.
I think for architects, it's concerning your question. The parameters, the levels of explicit design for architects or designers, and they get more abstract. You're not any longer working on the geometry, but on these kind of behavioral things, attitudes, and so on. You get to a more abstract level into your design because the geometry is deriving out of that. It's a question of this probabilistic. Balances and so on. And you, as a designer, go more and more. The better the systems get, more and more to these abstract questions, as you said, the way of organicity and living liveness. These levels, you're able to adapt them and to define them as a designer and get good setups, appropriate setups, and so forth for these kind of.
As you said, for the first time, these things get into our grasp as designers. Before, we had no choice. We have been all small Newtons, thinking about nature, laws in nature, and everything was fixed and very clear, and so on. And this is the message of modernism. This functional, okay, writing down a formula, fixing everything, and now it is perfect. In behavior, there is no perfection. So to say, somehow, and opening this design area is, I think, quite interesting.
And by that, we are able to overcome. This is a hypothesis of our energy discourse. This is a hypothesis, for example, for very simple thing with traffic control, with building automation and energy and sustainability and so on. All these kind or with city marketing and these kind of things. All this can be addressed only by these behavioral patterns, not by the fixed things. This is it's a nightmare. That this will work in a Newton in a specific way. People always try to do that, but it ends in catastrophe because there's no solution. And for example, the growth of what is a real big problem, the growth of these mega cities in the circular of Mexico City and so on, 50% of the city is in an unordered structure because the conventional systems of ordering are not adequate. They're not working. It's too complex, too fast, and people are not. This is not in an ordered way. So the methodology which is given by fixed structures, it's not suitable for these problems. But that's the limits of our problems are beyond these limits. Therefore, it's important to. And it's clear that this behavioral thinking is able to address much more of the problems we have than this mechanical thinking. Therefore, it's no fancy stuff, we think, and this is a clear next step to address really serious problems.
So the level of abstraction, of course, induces the necessity for additional design decisions. That means there are more parameters. You suddenly can and you have to think about temporal sequences. You have to, and you have to. Think about fuzzy stuff in an exact way. That means we have Markov theory is a mathematical, serious mathematical theory on the one hand. That means it's perfectly defined. But with this perfectly defined formalistic framework, we can talk about very fuzzy, open things. And that's nice, I think. So we do not need to imply strict rules to which everyone has to obey. We could leave, so to say, things running in a very relaxed way,
leaving control.
Without leaving the target, our targets, our goals. It's the famous paradigm of soft control, if you like. And for this, Markov provides the words, in quotation marks. The way how to express that without resorting to esoteric vocabulary.
It's just the operation, the operationalizations of words.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have lunch.
Yeah.
Me too.